the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 84, recorded Friday, March 29th, 2013. The new wire is air.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host for this week. With us this week is Ms. Dawn Mead. She is known as AV Dawn, the AV goddess extraordinaire. She also works for NetAV. She's the marketing and media coordinator. How are you, madam?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Also with us this week, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon, apparently I'm sloshed, is Michael Braithwaite. You know what? It's Good Friday. He's the Chief Strategy Officer for Clear One. Welcome, sir. Michael?
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And he Michael's a newbie, so Dawn, be easy on him. this week, we're going to talk about the fact that Google Glass may actually be a remote control, or the coolest... It's either the coolest remote control or the geekiest remote control. I'm not sure which. And it'll make fighting over the remote control even more interesting. John Siaka responds to a blog post by Andrew Robinson about whether or not the home theater is doomed. Dun, dun, dun. And we're going to play a little track from our buddy Hi-Fi talking about a very interesting place to put digital signage. Let's just leave it at that for the time being. Okay. First up, a couple different display stories we've got this week, guys. One is from Mashable. Dawn and I have been unapologetically waiting for OLED.
Yes, please.
For years. I think my grandfather and I back in the 30s were, not really. But here's the thing. It's one of the things that over the last 6 months or so people have been talking about. UHD TV, right? The 4K and what will eventually be 8K. I'm not trying to be snarky here, but that is what's coming down the pike next, right? It's already in certain projectors and such. But right now we're talking about in flat panels 4K. And we've kind of leapfrogged or left HD behind, and 4K is the new HD. It's called Ultra HD for a reason, and people have kind of tied the two together, have tied OLED to the success of 4K, meaning as successful as one will be, the other one will be as well. Well, here comes along another display, because Sony had a 4K display a couple months ago. This one is a bit more expensive. It's from Samsung. It comes in at a paltry $40,000. Dawn, is this... Let me ask it this way. Is this a good thing? Because just like when plasmas came out, the 720s and the 1080s, when those first came out, those were $20,000 and $25,000. People actually bought them, and those for early adopters made it possible for you and me to grab one at $1,000, 10 years later.
Well, you have to start somewhere. I desperately want OLED and even Ultra HD to a point, but I don't have that kind of money laying around, so I'm not going to be an early adopter here. But you have to start somewhere, but you also have to keep in mind there's a limit on the amount of content that's available currently. I recently went to the movie theater and finally saw a movie that says it used red cameras to shoot.
Oh, wow.
And I was all excited. I'm in the theater going, smacking Mr. AV Dawn and saying, look, red UHD, UHD. But, it was the Wizard of Oz movie. Mm-hmm. But once Oz comes out, yeah, that'll probably be available in Ultra HD. But it's going to be like when we first went to HD TVs and it was all standard definition content. It looked better. It wasn't fabulous. But, if you're plopping down $40,000, you want it to look fabulous. You want it to like rub your neck while you're watching TV, So, but you got to start somewhere. I'm not buying it, but hopefully someone rich and cutting edge wants it.
Michael, this is not, I'm not rich nor cutting edge. I'm still wearing bell bottoms, which eventually will come back in. I'm convinced. Michael, is this something where it's good that the fact that they're actually producing them now, because like, you know, Don and I have said, you know, eventually they will come down to a level where we can, you know, us normal folks can afford them.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely good to see that the technology is coming. And of course, who needs that new car when, you know, this you can watch where you were going to drive in that car anyways.
Well, and it'll be almost like you were there.
Exactly.
You don't need the car.
UHD flat screen is.
Michael has actually come up with a brilliant idea. It is the greenest thing that you can do is purchase this $40,000 TV, because here's the thing. You don't have to go anywhere. You can just look like, you know, you can watch TV and make it look like you were there. So I don't know. That was a bit of a stretch. Also with us, our talking about displays is from the USA Today, is a 100-inch laser TV. It's from LG, and I don't know. They couched it in the midst of March Madness, which, if you do March Madness, I'm sorry, because I don't think anybody had East Florida, Gulf Coast, whatever their name is, in the Sweet 16. So everybody's, you know, bracket, unless you probably went there. But is this, Don, is this just one more type of technology where, you know what, it's not OLED, right, but it's another step in the right direction, or is it a step in the right direction?
It's kind of a misnomer, actually. The headline on this article says 100-inch laser TV. It's a short throw projector,
yeah,
and a screen. I mean, anybody can have that, and a lot of people can have it for less than what this particular model is going for. I mean, you go to Infocom, check out the short throw projectors and grab one. So, you know, it's just a projection option. I kind of see it as a non-story, like, well, it's March Madness and we have to have a story and let's do a tech thing. And what do we got? Okay. Ultra HD isn't here yet. OLED isn't here yet. Let's pretend we have a laser TV and, you know, hype it.
But it has a tuner in it.
Yeah, but, you know, tuners are like a couple $100 from Contemporary Research or whoever. You just grab a little box and stick it on your projector. No big deal, you know? It's just kind of bundling what we've already got and making it a story in time for the basketball craziness, which I'm not a basketball fan, so March Madness means nothing to me. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't dig it.
No, I'm not either. Dawn and I are still both waiting on our couches, waiting for the first weekend in August, so... If you don't know what that is, it's football. So,
well,
it's a real sport.
We got Stanley Cup coming up too.
We do.
I'm undefeated right now, like 15 games or something ridiculous. So, you know, it's.
And I'm a Blues fan, and we'll leave it at that, because I'm not. Michael, is this kind of, you know, USA Today, you know, basically packaging what we've seen at Infocom, or is it genuinely kind of cool and unique when it comes to, you know. The reason I like the story is because of the tuner, because it makes it feel more like an actual TV.
Yes, I agree. There's actually some really interesting applications, primarily on the higher ed and in the corporate space. The big benefit that you see from this, and I agree that we've already had projection, you know, with short throw and different lens options like this for a while. But the one of the deterrents, so to speak, in some of these markets are the maintenance of them. And so the fact that the ability to have a much longer lifespan without having to constantly be changing bulbs out, and for some of these markets, especially higher ed, is a very attractive thing, because they're not actually purchasing this on the upfront $89.99 change that Tim has in his pocket price.
Yeah.
They usually are buying these based on, here's the kind of maintenance budget that we have annually. And when you have to calculate in a couple bulbs and the maintenance of going around and changing all those, it does start to make sense for some of these applications.
No, and that is one thing I didn't think about, is the fact that you have, the full cost, you know, the long term cost of these things, not just, you know, the upfront pricing, as it were.
That's a great point. I have a lampless projector that I got at last Infocom, and I love it for that reason. The long term, you know, total cost of ownership of it is fantastic. So, all right, you're winning me over on this story.
Well, and that's the one other thing is over the last few years, the whole lampless idea has, you know, turned into HD DVD versus Blu-ray by any stretch of the imagination, but it's an interesting debate because my daytime job, I work for a college, and that's one of the issues that we have is the long-term cost of things. And you've got your projectors that, oh good Lord, any given year you're putting out between $750 and $1,000, depending on the lumens, depending on the manufacturer. But the long-term cost of those is probably more in the neighborhood of about $1,500, $2,000 if you're starting with round numbers at about a grand. If you purchase a lampless, you know, projector for, I don't know, $1,000, $1,200, even if you equal the long-term cost, the maintenance cost you'll save, you know, in other words, in man hours, is pretty substantial. So the problem then is convincing the accountants that it all works out. So that's always difficult. From our buddies over at CE Pro, our Julie Jacobson writes, the Control 4's hardware centralized lighting control system is here. Dun, dun, dun. Michael, I get the feeling over the last 6 months, everybody who's anybody in the world of control is getting into lighting. Is that a fair statement?
It's a very fair statement. You've got large players that have traditional players, of course, and you know, some of the lighting companies that have been around for a long time have been acquired by other companies. And so there's a lot of movement in this category. I'll even throw out something else that's slightly different than the Julie's article here. And that is, if you look on some of these crowdfunding sites, mm-hmm. you'll see an amazing amount of lighting projects, lighting dimmer projects. That are going on, but as far as Control 4 goes here, you know, some may say, "Well, you know, what's the big deal?" And what do they have? You know, the real interesting innovation that I saw with this product was not so much with the dimmers themselves and even the communication or controlling it via your mobile device, but it's more in the fact of the mechanical engineering. So if you look at the way the buttons are designed and the way that a end user potentially could come in very easily without removing the dimmer and change the configuration of the buttons. So if you think about it, when we're working on, when the Pro AV business works on a divisible room or an area where I'm configuring this room for different events that are happening all the time, usually you can't just walk in with a lighting dimmer and say, oh, you know, okay, this room now has these buttons and this room has this. But this actually starts to open that up where potentially the hotel staff or someone that's setting up this divisible room could immediately change these buttons without modifying the programming or removing the dimmer, which, you know, has its own issues from an electrical contractor point of view. So that was the best thing that I saw from it. I mean, I think it's an interesting product, just like you mentioned, the dozen others. Yeah. But this aspect of you could reconfigure the user controls without removing the dimmer is pretty interesting.
Well, and Don, Michael's right. Everybody has been getting into this. Is this kind of, I'm going to call it the Nest effect, where some of these manufacturers, and this is not saying that Control 4's is, because it's actually quite robust. I mean, the picture that they have on there is a regular looking, you know, lighting panel with wires that I should never touch. Let's just be frank about it. But is this kind of the Nest effect where putting in the hands of not just integrators, but also DIYers, the ability to add more and more automation when it comes to home lighting control?
Short answer, yes. Long answer, I am so glad you phrased it as the Nest effect, going from lighting to environmental.
But it's all,
you know,
kind of like
heating and HVAC.
Yeah.
And my thing is, I see this story, it could be read as, yeah, it's just another lighting from another control company. But I think it's pretty indicative of the steps that we're taking as an industry and as business in general, not just the AV industry, but the greater business world, to complete and total building management, smart buildings, integrating all of your mechanical, your IT, your environmental, all of that under one sort of, you know, magic touch the panel and everything happens header. And I mean, this is something we talked about in November, the Infocom 100, the think tank Infocom puts together every year. That was the topic, was bringing together all of these different, what used to be totally different industries and totally different parts of building management and the business world, you know, and putting them under one umbrella of controlling the way we work and the way we live and our environments in every aspect, you know, from one panel or from one iPad or from one whatever. And so I think we're going to be seeing more and more stories like this, where the traditional AV control and AV companies are sort of eking into these other areas, mechanically, electrically, security, all of those things. We're kind of, it's a greater convergence than the AV-IT convergence that we underwent already. And it's going to be coming. And if you're smart as an integrator, you're going to think about it and you're going to get somebody that knows BACnet, which is the building automation controls. Like with I was talking to someone from Johnson Control yesterday, and we had a great conversation about this very topic. You know, so you're going to see AV integrators hiring people that know BACnet. You're going to see AMX, Crestron, Control 4, whoever, starting to consider these things as a bigger part of their business. And, you know, the smart building, it's coming. It's maybe not immediate, but start thinking about it. And this story is a great, great example of that.
So is this a case where at Infocom is about two months, not even 2 months away, is it? Not even 3 months away. And is it a case where we're going to start seeing Honeywell and Johnson Controls and Trane at Infocom, or is it more where we're going to start seeing Crestron and Clear One and AMX and the like at shows that those guys normally go to?
And the answer is probably a greater yes. We're going to start seeing a little bit of crossover both directions. And this is something we did talk about at the 100 extensively, is, you know, they had people at the little conference from the AV industry. They had IT people there. They had facilities management people there and people that own, you know, all the office buildings in 12 greater metro areas or whatever. And they had people from like Johnson Controls. And we all were discussing, like, who's going to be taking charge of this? Who's going to be like the head umbrella, you know? And nobody really had a firm answer, because it's all sort of all evolving as we go. But chances are it'll fall under IT, because, you know, everybody respects and knows IT and they own everything. But who in of all of those industries I mentioned actually has the hands-on experience of taking disparate crap that isn't designed to work together and integrating it to make it work together?
Yeah.
And that's the AV integrators. I mean, that's what we do with video and audio and lighting and shades and whatever else that you put into a system. So I think we're going to be, if we're smart as an industry, we're going to be working hand in hand with the IT folks, and the mechanical folks are just going to start coming to our shows, and we're going to show up at theirs, and it's just going to all meld together.
Well, that is the case, is the fact that whether it's AMX or Crestron or Aurora, whoever, whatever control company you're talking about, these guys have been doing this for years, so you're right. It'll be fun to watch, at least. You're listening to AV Week. That very nice lady right there, her name is AV Dawn. She is known as Dawn Mead, marketing and media coordinator for NetAV. Also with us is Michael Braithwaite. He is the chief strategy officer for Clear One. So we have a friend at AV Week. We have one friend at AV Week. Everybody else doesn't like us. His name is Phil Cordell. He's known as Hi-Fi. Craig McCormick wrote an interesting article about digital signage, and we'll play a piece by Phil here in a second. But, okay, so it is, first of all, it's a minor league team. It's not like you're going to see this at Yankee Stadium. But they have urinal videos. There's not really a nice way to put this. This is how you pronounce it, Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs have the first, what they're calling, the first face-level public urinal display. Here, let's play something from Phil here.
Peruse a menu and hit your target audience at any venue. It'll make the fist pump like a Arsenio Hall when they get a glimpse of your giant video wall. A great way to guarantee I read it all is face-level placement on my urinal. Reach these people.
Yes, face placement on my urinal. That was, he rhymed that with Arsenio Hall. So he's a very talented young man. Michael, is this a, okay, so let's be honest here. Is this too far? Bathroom digital signage, and especially right there where you're doing your business.
Well, some folks in digital signage would call this a captive audience, so to speak. And it does bring a whole new meaning to the word gesture-based controls.
But, oh my! Indeed, it does.
I do think that you will see more and more of this type, not necessarily urinal-based, but all, wherever you are based signage. And there are lots of companies out there that the one thing that is not apparent in the article, but is in the technology, is that there are sensors that are looking at the person who is watching the screen. And so they're doing that to capture the demographics. Now, you would say, well, isn't this sign in a men's urinal? So I know a little bit about the demographics already, and that could be. But generally what they do is they're trying to, if you're familiar with what some of the Xbox 360 and some of the Kinect and guys are doing, is they're watching where you're looking at the screen so that they can improve or replace the ads. So, you know, it's definitely intruding into every area, including going to, you know, relieve yourself.
Now, hang on for a second. Time out. First of all, you're telling me that there is not recording devices, but there are cameras.
That's correct.
In the men's?
It's not recording. It's not recording.
Oh, sure, it's not. I'm sorry. I'm too much of a conspiracy theorist.
No, it's not recording. It's looking. It's just like I believe we're going to be talking about glass coming up. Yeah. It's the same thing where it's tracking the eye movement. And so it does report back certain demographic information of where you're looking on the screen. Or in some cases in the men's journal, are you looking at the screen or are you looking somewhere else? So it could even bring up an alert for that matter.
Okay, and the second thing is, doesn't this sound awfully close to Minority Report? Where, and this is not the tinfoil hat Tim coming out. I'm honestly asking mm-hmm. the question. Does that not sound awfully Minority Report-ish? When I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, but during the movie, not the future crime part, but when the character played by Tom Cruise was running through some terminal of some sort. The digital signage that was in the movie was specializing and personalizing the ads for him specifically. He was saying, I don't recall the character's name, but let's say it was Tom Cruise. It was saying, "Hi, Tom. We know that you're, you know, of short stature. So here's some lifts, or, you know, we know that you're into this, that, and the other." Are we getting there? I mean, is that what we're saying here? Is that eventually we will have actual, you know, Michael specified ads and Dawn specified ads?
Yes.
Tim Sweet, if you think we're not already there, you're delusional.
I'm delusional.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, we're already to the point that just by looking at someone's shopping, customer club purchases,
yeah.
Target was able to let a family know that their daughter was pregnant before her family did.
No, before she knew.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to basically, you know, use what purchases she had and use their predictive analytics and determine that she was expecting. And this father started, they started getting ads for maternity things for their 16-year-old. I mean, we're already in that world. This is just a more techie way of doing that. You know, and this kind of thing was coming way back when, a couple years ago, when we first started seeing the little screens on your gas pumps.
Yeah.
And while you're pumping your gas, they show commercials. Now, the cynic in me wants to say, you know, this is just yet another example of the marginalization of women in technology, you know, because like the men get video games at their urinals, whereas our, you know, cubicle video games or whatever, you know, women are gamers too. Women like technology too, but yeah. It's just kind of skeevy overall. I think the whole story is a little skeevy, but I mean, we're already there from the marketing perspective that there are customized ads. They read, you know, they can, some of the near field communication stuff, so that the sensors can tell like who basically is coming past, and even the location based things like Foursquare and whatnot. If you're a member of those and you're signed in and you go walking past your local coffee place, it can push an ad to you because it knows, you know, if you check in somewhere or you're nearby, it'll say, here's an ad for the coffee place next door. Mm-hmm. Come have a cup on us. I mean, we're already in that world. This is just a really disgusting example of it.
That's the other thing is one thing that I think that I don't think, well, I don't think you're going to see the women's version of this anytime soon because it is kind of creepy and I don't think that women will go for it. I could be wrong.
I'm shocked that men will be going for it, honestly.
Well, guys are exhibitionists. Let's be honest. I mean, they don't care. They use urinals for crying out loud, you know? And that's just one giant, you know, anyhow. Moving on. we'll play the full version of Hi-Fi's track at the end of this. John Siaco writes actually a rebuttal to Andrew Robinson's. Commercial cinema may be doomed, but home theater is far from safe. And John says, wait a minute. We got plenty of stuff going on in home theater, dude. We are fine. Don, is John right here where, you know, he says, you know, what home theater has a lot going for it from everything from the THX to, you know, surround sound, the different flavors of surround sound. Something that John and I differ on, I think, is 3D. But when it comes to home theater and not just huge systems, but nice systems, are they going by the wayside? You know, so is Andrew right or is John right when he says that home theater is not doomed?
I think that this argument of is home theater doomed is the same argument they had 20 some years ago. Is hi-fi stereo doomed? There's always going to be a new technology and there's always going to be changing standards of what we expect, whether it's, you know, who has the biggest rack of speakers and the most components on their stereo system from Stereo Discounters or who has the most surround and the most, you know, subwoofer and the biggest screens. I mean, it's all sort of the same, keeping up with the Joneses, who's, well, I'll be polite after that last story, but whose system is bigger, you know, as long as there are people that are tech heads, there will be a market. It's just maybe going to evolve from what we're selling now as home theaters to whatever the next thing is. You know, the classic line from Men in Black, oh, great, now I have to buy the White Album again.
Yes.
You know, it's the same thing. It's not going away.
No.
It just may change its flavor a little bit.
Michael, is home theater going away? Is it doomed or is it here to stay?
I think it's not only is it here to stay, it's actually seems to be expanding. You know, we've all seen maybe some of these commercials where the soccer guy fan is going around his house and every drawer he opens is a screen. Well, that's a pretty big trend. There are people who have their surround sound in their bathrooms. With the cost of high quality flat panels in the area that it's in right now, people are putting them all over. And, you know, it's not just home, even out in the garage and in the car, you know, there's some THX certified vehicles now. So you're talking about people enjoying that immersion, that experience, that rich experience, theater type experience in more than just the home theater. we see it more and more where people in unusual places like kitchens, where they have a 7.1 surround sound in a kitchen. And, you know, not that many years ago, I don't know that even the exotic, residential, you know, projects had surround sound in every single room. But you do see that now.
You know what? You raise a good point where it's not doomed. It's actually expanding. Because here's the thing. Years ago, and I, you know, I'm of an age that the television that was in the center of my home was a console television, right? It was a piece of furniture. It's not something we hung on a wall. It's something that my mom put candles and home interior stuff on top of. And I was forced to dust every single weekend, you know, because
I think we had the same mom, dude.
Yeah. But it was, you know, that's what we had, right? And the home theater, the hi-fi that you know, Don related to, was right next to it, or you know somewhere in the vicinity. And we had a record player, and again, I'm of an age. We had an 8-track player, and this, that, and the other. And now everybody has something, right? You've got something in each room. I mean, you've got the parents in the master bedroom. You have a TV, and a lot of times you're going to have some sort of auxiliary speaker system or auxiliary sound in there, simply because the thinner the TVs, the thinner the displays have gotten, the kind of the not great the speakers have gotten for that. You've got them in the kitchen, so you can watch, you know, Rachel Ray or the Pioneer Woman and cook along with her. And I do that, so that's just me. And you're right, you know, the THX certified cars, CNET, probably one of the best known and one of the most well done podcasts and shows that they have is their Car Tech show. And it's all about, you know, the technology that goes into cars. So,
and don't forget, we've got them at the urinals now.
Oh my gosh. At the urinals. I'm gonna give a hi-fi a run for his money. I'm not gonna rap. I'm gonna do like a crooner. Yeah, that's me.
You're the Bing Crosby of AV.
Ba, 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 ba. All right. Michael made mention of this. I don't know why I did that, because I'm actually recording this. Google patent says Google Glass will be the ultimate remote. Dun dun dun. You know what? Here's the thing with this, and Google Glass, whether or not you think it's the next biggest thing or you think it's, you know, something silly, it is something that we're going to have to deal with, especially in the world of AV, especially if they get down to it and they make this some sort of remote. Michael, is this something that not just Aurora and Crestron and AMX have to deal with, but, you know, you guys at Clear One and other industry, other manufacturers who have controls that are no longer simply, you know, RS-232, you guys also have controls that are IP-based, and you guys are on the network just like everybody else, right?
That's right. That's right. And it's, I think you summed it up well, because not just the control manufacturers, but the IT administrators, you know, talking about the bring your own device. When people are walking in wearing some sunglasses, that they're having a live video conference with the other office in a different country, you know, that does start to present some of these challenges. As far as the remote control aspect of it, it you know, that remains to be seen, but it does look promising. The whole augmented reality is very powerful once you combine that with some of the other aspects, like, you know, NFC and QR, and when you can just look at something and then pop up the URL in there and control it, that's a whole different ballgame.
And Don, not just that, but you've got a situation now where, you know, let's just say that in some households, the fight over the remote control is very interesting.
Yeah, you know, I'm only laughing because we just recently, Mr. AV Don and I, discovered that there's an app for our receiver from our satellite company. And we both put the app on our phones. And so one of us will be sitting there with the remote trying to change the channel, and the other will be sitting across the room with their phone changing it back, or just being a jerk. And So I'm laughing because it's totally where we're going, except instead of playing with your phone or the touch panel beside you or the actual physical remote from the company, you'll be like blinking and trying to change the channel and bobbing your head or whatever, however you control it. And it should make for some interesting television viewing in some houses. Let's put it that way.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It does present an opportunity for the AV for those of us in the AV control business and industry, and that is I liken it much to when Crestron and AMX first came around. If you really look at why did what was the first solution problem that they were solving, and if you look back, there was a term for that at one time. If you remember the coffee table. Remember how people used to talk about, oh, I have all these 25 remotes sitting on the coffee table. Mm-hmm. And now I just have this one touch panel and it took care of all those. I mean, that kind of grew several of the control companies into where they are today. What if you look at where we are with, as Don just talked about, with the sword fighting over the channels there, you really have a new version of this, which is what you'd call a virtual coffee table. So you have all of these different apps, and that does present that opportunity to, okay, if I can harness all of those so I can make it easy too. Because yes, us geeks and the AV, professionals, we love all of these controls and that, but most of the general, public out there, they find it a little difficult. So.
Oh yeah. My wife hates the fact that I have 6 remotes right now. So. She's like, can't you do something with Crestron? Well, yeah, I could, but anyhow, moving on. This comes to us also from CE Pro. There's a lot of stories from them this week. He talks about the HDMI performance signatures and the author, Jeff, and I'm going to butcher Jeff's last name, Bocaccio. It's Italian. It looks like bocce ball. So he talks about, he asked the question, why haven't we seen HDMI cables move to smaller form factors? The answer is because they couldn't. Which led my weird little brain to thinking, okay, so if we can't get smaller performance specs when it comes to HDMI, and I'm not going to get into whether or not HDMI is evil or not. I personally think it is, but that's beside the point. But here's the thing. There's a certain limitation to HDMI. You cannot get it down to a certain size. Simply because it has to be within a certain, you have to have so many, the 19, was it 19 pins, the 19 conductors on it. People are moving to HD base T or AVB or other, twisted pair versions. Michael, are we seeing the, not the death, but the diminishing of HDMI? And if so, is there something coming along to take its place that's going to be like it, in other words, an actual another connector, or are we simply moving to the realm of strictly twisted pair in some way, shape, or form?
Well, I'm often asked that question. I've been on panels at some of the trade shows for like HDMI Hot Seat and so forth. And I'm going to tell you the same answer that I generally tell people that ask me that. And that is, they're asking, what's the next connector? What's the next? And really, my response generally is error. There's no need really for the HDMI connector when I can produce a link from the device, from the encoder or from the decoder or from your sync or source or whatever nomenclature you want to use, and I can encrypt it the same way that is performed by the HDMI cable. And so the next cable is really no cable. I like what you said about twisted pair because, we're all into networking and that's good, but guess what? Internet protocol isn't shackled down to a wired infrastructure. And so that's really what I would say is if you look at the mobile uses and the way displays are and how it's going, is you won't need an HDMI connector.
So let me ask this, we'll get Don's take on this. How long before, you said air, meaning wireless, how long before wireless is stable enough to handle you know, Blu-ray and not Blu-ray, but HD, and we've already talked about 4K here, and 8K is coming down the line. Will that hamper the move to wireless, or will that speed that up?
Well, I think that that's already here. If you look at the modern wireless transmission systems out there, they can already handle the amount of data. Like UWB already can handle anything 4K wise and at any resolution. Even the what a lot of people are doing right now of stacking projectors for like passive 3D. You're still going to be able to do that over a UWB link very easily. And the cost of what the IEEE does, and if you so I'm one of the members of the AVB consortium, the Avenue .org, and you know, we already look at these things. And yes, if you have networking infrastructure as a backbone, that's going to be desired, it's going to be needed, it's going to be very reliable. But the wireless links now are generally pretty reliable and robust.
Okay. Dawn, is Michael right, where the next connector really is air? Or do you think maybe there'll be an interim? Or am I just off my rocker and HDMI is going to be here until there's nothing but, you know, wireless?
Dear God, I hope not. sorry, not a big fan of HDMI. Those stupid things fall out all the time. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that we could be looking at going right to wireless. Ultimately, you know, all the sci-fi predictions of the future, that's where we're going to be, you know, just thought-based, you know, you think something and it happens and there's no wires and no cables and no direct connection or anything. You know, we're not going there immediately. But I think wireless is where we're going. I also shudder to think of that because wireless means you're going to need air bandwidth. And, you know, already with the spectrum getting auctioned and getting repartitioned and divvied out and the license-free devices and the white space, you know, and the whole mess. I live in Washington, D.C., live and work in the Washington, D.C. area. This, with all the government agencies and the sporting things and the theatrical things, this is like the worst possible place on the planet for wireless spectrum. It's horrible trying to find frequencies that are available with such a critical mass of people using it. And if we're talking about putting all of our devices and all of our connectivity wireless, it makes me want to cry. you know, I hope there's something physical at some point until we come up with some magic solution that makes it all work well without the drama. But, you know, listening to my texts and everyone complain about the drama, it just frightens me. And the other thing is I noticed nobody ever mentions fiber. I mean, granted, my company does a lot of work in the government sector, and pretty much government's one of the only people that can afford most of the fiber stuff out there. It's always been a cost factor. But, I mean, that's similar to wireless. It's using light, you know, and it's secure and it's fast and it can carry a lot of info. You know, why can't we look at some kind of solution where we all go to fiber for a while before we go to the scary wireless kill the people in the D.C. area, you know, something like that.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but you're right. The one thing about fiber is the cost, right? And just like with the $40,000 UHD TV, there have to be early adopters that purchase the products that make the R&D possible, and eventually the prices will come down.
The feds have been buying it. We've got early adopters. It's our tax dollars. Come on, give us some cheap and affordable, you know, good stuff.
But then you start yelling up to Jersey. I'll start yelling down to Texas, and we'll see who comes up first. And well, actually, no. Michael should yell at Texas. He's there in Austin. I'll yell over to Anaheim, and they can ignore me still.
There you go.
Well, and Dawn mentioned this. The FCC is actually getting ready to auction off more wireless because that's what we need is fewer fewer megahertz. Dawn, this comes to us from a website called Fierce Wireless. The guys that live and breathe this stuff, and they're getting ready to auction off some spectrum blocks. First of all. You know what? Here's the thing, and it's the FCC, and something I've told my students for years and years and years is that the FCC is the devil. because, and I'm not being, somewhat, tongue-in-cheek, because they've somehow lost their way since the 1930s and when they were first introduced, which was to, protect the public good. It's actually in the document that started them. So here's the thing. Are they protecting the public good by auctioning off these spectrums of wireless?
Maybe, but probably not.
Okay.
All right. When I first started the whole AV Dawn thing and started my blog way back in 2009, 2008, something like that, one of the very first things I wrote about was the whole white space issue and the FCC, reallocating and auctioning off the different bands of frequency. And I felt like an idiot because then all these beware, doom and gloom, Cassandra on the cliffs predictions, like none of them happened. But the more that they auction off and the more devices that come online in these things, the more we're going to start to see, the law of unintended consequences. You'll go to the theater and not be able to hear things. Or, already we're in the DC area, it takes forever to find a wireless mic frequency that'll work in some of these downtown offices where every building around you has 30 different wireless mics, plus whatever the government might be using and isn't telling you about. We're going to start bumping up on these problems. There's only so much bandwidth. There's only so much spectrum. And the more don't get me wrong. I'm a geek. I love my toys. I love my tech. And the more stuff they sell, the more cool things that come on the market that we can play with. But eventually we're going to run out of air, if everybody's trying to use the same spot. I mean, if you've ever driven in DC traffic, it's the same thing. They ran out of road. Well, we're going to run out of frequency space and you're not going to be able to fit more stuff in, and with every 5-year-old having an iPad now or whatever, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah.
So I could write another blog. It didn't help the last time. It's not going to help this time. Let's be thinking, you guys, Michael and others at manufacturers, to figure out ways to make, I know Shure and Sennheiser and such are doing a great job of trying to figure out new ways of doing their mics so that they don't run into this problem. But like we said last story, if we're going to be going wireless, God help us all, let's figure out what we're going to do here and come up with it.
Well, and Michael, Don raises a good point. There is only so much spectrum, right? I mean, there is, I'm not going to say it, it's like the old story about the patent worker who said that nothing else can be invented, but there is only so much, there's a finite amount of spectrum. So is the FCC okay in doing this, or should they maybe back off and start allowing for more freedom, I guess, in the wireless spectrum?
I think that they should be doing this. I think that in order to spur innovation, we have to be able to allow some more capabilities and different precision. So I actually am for it. Originally in some of these auctions and what they're trying, if you may recall, some of these auctions were initially meant to pay off our national debt.
And that worked.
Yeah.
So far, we're way behind. So we may need to sell even more. But
sell it all. Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, the other thing is that's a little bit funny about this is once there's some migration into the different frequency bands, sometimes you'll see that the previous bands do free up. And if you stick around a certain band long enough, you'll be amazed at how well the older frequencies start to work for an AV integrator. As everybody's moved into the new hot bands, it is interesting to me to see how the whole industry moves with these.
So kind of stick it out where you are, and eventually they'll move on to the greener pastures.
It's like a noise floor. There's a certain noise floor, and then if you stay in that, you'll notice after a few years, the noise floor is reduced, and all of a sudden, the products work tremendously well. But I understand where Don's coming from, and it is challenging. We have our own wireless microphones as well, and so it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah, it is. And there's also a move to register frequencies in your area, so... So yeah, there's that. So that may help out some people, like churches and schools, and government institutions who, you know, they're going to be there for a while. So, all right. That is all the time we have for AV Week. Thank you so much for joining us. With us has been Michael Braithwaite. He is the Chief Strategy Officer for Clear One. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you or find Clear One?
If you come to our cute little website at clearone, all one word, .com, that's where you can find myself and some really cool solutions.
Clearone.com. It is a cute little website. And also with us is Dawn Mead from NetAV. She's also known as AV Dawn, marketing and media coordinator there. Thank you so much, ma'am.
No problem. My pleasure.
How can people find you, your bloggings and your Twitterings?
If you're looking for me personally, I'm on Twitter at AVDawn, and I'm at avdawn.com for my blog. Our company is at net-av.com, and we're an integrator here in Maryland. And if you're coming to the Infocom show and want to talk about social media and want to talk about marketing, I'm teaching a class, and I'm trying to pimp that class. So please, if you're free Wednesday morning, sign up for the course at Infocom. It's social media and marketing for the small AV integrator.
That is so awesome. You're teaching a class.
I'm all excited. I saw you're teaching one too, sir. So
I'm emceeing a class. I'm not smart enough to teach a class. I am emceeing the Technology Managers Symposium.
Oh, there you go.
That's a fancy word that means a bunch of us are going to get together. Technology managers are those of us who kind of manage it for large organizations, churches and schools and large corporations. Your husband now is a technology manager. I informed him the other day. So he's also, go ahead.
So he can come to your symposium.
He can come.
And you all can hire me to do your work.
Yay!
There you go.
So yeah,
and we'll all use Michael's product.
Yes,
see, it works out in the end.
Everybody wins in the end. So yeah, that one is actually a Super Tuesday event. So if you're interested in that, and you're a technology manager, go hang out there. And if you're interested in the shelter part, please go sign up for Dawn's class. That would be really cool. Thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it is TD Tim David Albright. But more importantly for me, really, go by the website. They've done a really good job on it. It wasn't me. I'm not that talented. Go by the website avnation.tv, avnation.tv. You can find us there. Twitter, Facebook, Google+, LinkedIn, all sorts of other things. But it really does start there. You can find this show and others. avnation.tv. Thanks so much for joining us. That is all the time we have for AV Week.